Welcome back, my friends. I'm so glad that there are enough people that care about this stuff that I can make a podcast out of it. It's a great delight for me. My name is Aaron Francis. I am your host, and today I'm talking with Lev Kokotov about sharding Postgres. We're talking about pgdog, which is not a Postgres extension. Everything's an extension, not pgdog. You'll have to listen to find out why he went that route. This is a great interview. He's very down to earth, very low key. It's a lot of fun. As a slight programming note, I'm curious your take on this. I'm thinking of taking on sponsors for this show to help me get it edited and produced a lot faster. Right now, I just do it all myself. But here's the caveat. I don't want to take on database sponsors. Here's my thinking. I want to keep the content pure, and I don't want people to be hesitant to come on because their competitors are sponsoring. And, you know, I don't want to introduce this pay to play thing where somebody sponsors and then they get to come on. I just don't want to do any of that. So let me know what you think. Who should I take on as a sponsor for this podcast, provided they're not a database company? Okay. Enough metaprogramming. Let's get to the show. Hey, y'all. Welcome back. Today, we've got Lev Kokotov from pgdog. Not only pgdog, pgcat, too. So we're going to talk about the whole thing. But first, Lev, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Aaron. I'm Lev. I've been working on databases for a long time. I've been an engineer all my life. Self-taught originally, then went to school, then got a couple gigs at a few startups, then worked for Instacart, started my previous company before this, so it's my second startup. I've been coding in Rust with Postgres for quite some time. We could talk about that, but that's the short summary about me, I think.
Perfect. Okay, so before we get started on Postgres, tell me the self-taught and then went to school story, because I'm self-taught in the computer science field. I got my degree in accounting, but I never went back and got like a CS degree or even anything related. So what's your self-taught and then school story?
Yeah, for sure. When I was a kid, I was like 16. I just was interested in computers. I was playing a lot of World of Warcraft. It's okay, judge away. It was a different
classic. That's okay. I was a Red Alert 2 guy for many, many years, so spiritually similar.
Me too. I love Red Alert 2 for sure. 3 as well. So I just like start. I was on the computer already, so I just kind of started programming just a little bit for fun, just to learn what it's all about. I started with C++, which was a big mistake because I couldn't write anything. It was so hard, and I just kind of assumed that I wasn't just good at this. It wasn't good at this, so I just wouldn't bother. So I decided to study social science. I went into pre-law, did a little bit of political science for like about 3-4 years. But at the same time, I was also kind of like programming on the side. And I even got like a freelance job as a PHP programmer for a hot second. And I mean, we all start with PHP.
Yeah. Some of us stick with it. But yes, we all start there. So we're all the same in that regard.
Yes, we are. You know, it took me like 5 years to realize, like, you know, like most of the time I'm just like coding. I'm enjoying this. I should probably like do this for real. And then I was like, well, you know, computer science degree sounds really good. You know, I'll just try it. And it was honestly the hardest thing I've ever studied. It took me like 3 years to finish, and it was actually really tough. But yeah, it was worth it. Honestly, like I learned a lot of like the theory. I just learned to like, you know, like bang my head against the problem like for a semester, frankly. And then you kind of learn about this about yourself, that you can actually solve all these problems that you thought were super hard. And I think that's the best lesson I got out of it.
Yeah. So that was going to be my question, is was it worth it? And it sounds like it definitely was. And from your perspective, obviously you learned fundamentals, but you think the learning the stick-to-itiveness is the most valuable thing you learned there?
Yeah, they I think that's the case. Yeah, they kind of put you on the timeline and they give you this like playbook and they tell you what to learn and they kind of teach you a little bit of discipline around programming, because it's sometimes hard to kind of like stick with something and be like, especially if you're like just doing it for fun on the side. Like you just like it took me like maybe like 6 or 8 years to learn Rust as the language, just because I just was doing it on the side. I didn't really care. I just kind of gave up multiple times. But in school, you know, I had 3 months. If I didn't learn something, I would fail the class, and that would suck. So, yeah.
Oh, man, so interesting. Okay, that's not what we're here to talk about, but that is terribly interesting. So what we're here to talk about is Postgres. So
I did an episode recently with Sugu, who is building Multigrass, and many people were like, hey, we should talk about PG Dog. And I was like, let's talk about PG Dog. So PG Dog exists. PG Cat also exists. So let's start with PG Cat. Tell me what that is and a little bit of the history before we move into your current one, which is PG Dog.
Yeah, for sure. I wrote PG Cat between jobs. I was a database engineer at Instacart for 4 years, and we ran into all kinds of scaling problems with Postgres, including sharding. And we did a lot of that stuff manually, just ad hoc, with bash scripts, honestly, and just like hacking PG Bouncer a little bit. And that was great. And then I was kind of like done and, took a break. And, what I like to do between jobs is kind of like work on all these passion projects that I wish I had the chance to work at in a real job, but they don't typically let you do that. So, I had a month off between jobs and I put my thoughts on paper, wrote PG Cat in Rust, because again, I was still learning Rust at the time. And I reached out to a couple of my friends at Instacart and I was like, hey, I wrote this thing that we always talked about, sharding for Postgres. Isn't that cool? And their first response was like, didn't you just quit? Like, what are you doing?
Aren't you supposed to be like on sabbatical for a month until you start your new job?
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, okay, fine, whatever. So they kind of picked it up, took a look at it, like fixed it mostly because, I didn't have access to like massive production scale anymore. Sure. So they did. So they ran it against all their production DBs and eventually like migrated to PG Cat from PG Bouncer, which was really, really fun to see. So that's really the...
Oh, wow. they migrated from PG Bouncer to PG Cat.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So give me the high level, give me the elevator pitch for what is PG Cat.
Well, PG Cat is I would say a really advanced connection pooler and proxy. It can do connection pooling, sure, but it can also do load balancing. So if you have multiple replicas, you can just point your app at PG Cat and it'll just take care of everything. Load balancing queries between multiple replicas, spreading the load evenly, and then even splitting writes and reads. So if you have a primary and multiple replicas, which you obviously would, you don't have to, rewrite your code in your app to like point the write queries to the primary and read queries to the replica. PG Cat will take care of that as well.
Cool.
And I think the one really cool feature about it is failover. So if one of your replicas goes offline because of a hardware failure, PG Cat will automatically remove it from the load balancing pool and move traffic to whatever is left. So you get your 4 nines of uptime for your Postgres replicas, which was a huge issue for us at Instacart, at least. Mm-hmm. We would lose a replica almost every week or so because we had like hundreds of them.
So you're working in this high scale environment, and then you are going to switch jobs. And so you have some time off work, so you decide to work, which is classic. What is it about PG Bouncer that you looked at it and you're like, no, I'm going to just fundamentally write a brand new thing. And what did you do? What did you do differently to make that worth the effort?
Yeah, great question. We actually forked PG Bouncer at Instacart to add a little feature to it. It took me like 2 months to just ask something really trivial because it's written in C. I'm not a C expert. It took me a little bit to learn the language. You could say it's a simple language, but underneath you really have to manage a lot of complexity yourself. Mm-hmm. Memory management, pointers. I segfaulted that thing so many times before I got anything to work. Probably it's just on me, but frankly, I just kind of looked at it. I'm like, well, I don't think I can add features trivially to this. It would take me months, years to change it in a way that's reliable and safe. And the connection pooling itself is like, it's not that much, that's not that hard of a problem to solve, frankly. You can write a connection pooler yourself, like, give yourself a month maybe, and you'll probably be able to do it. And I was like, well, I'll just write it in a language that I know really well and I can build on later. Like the more interesting features are not really connection pooling, it's everything else that I would like to add to it. So I just rewrote the connection pooler. It took me like, a couple weeks. And then I just started adding more stuff to it. So that's probably the reason why.
So I have to imagine that some of this was a scratch your own itch exercise. So it wasn't a purely rational exercise, but some part of it is like, hey, I want this thing to exist in a way that is easy for me to extend, modify, control, tweak, change, And unfortunately, PG Bouncers is not that thing. And so the combination of those two reasons led you to just take this time to write your own little project, which sounds like has become a very big project. So what is the status of PG Cat today?
Well, so unfortunately, like, we don't maintain it anymore. I moved everything to PG Dog. And the reason for that was the architecture for PG Cat was kind of like, it was like a V0 or a V1 of what I really, really wanted to build. Mm-hmm. I wanted to add support for cross-shard queries, automatic shard detection, just like making a true, like, horizontally scalable, almost database engine that's powered by Postgres mm-hmm. behind the scenes. And PG Cat was like, you would have to rewrite the majority of it. So I decided to start a new project. Plus, PGCAD was kind of ish sponsored ish by my last company, which unfortunately shut down as well. So I just decided to start something new. People still use it in production. People still ask me questions about it. I, you know, happily tell them like what's going on. It's reasonably stable. It's used in prod, mm-hmm. so people can just pick it up and use it. That's completely fine. But I don't think any of the original folks are still working on it anymore.
Is there a lead maintainer or a community around it, or has all that energy moved over to PG Dog now?
Partly yes, partly no. So there's two guys who helped me build it. One at OneSignal, the company, and one at Instacart. Mustafa, you probably heard of him. He did a bunch of talks on how they do Rails over there. It's incredible. They just kind of solved the problem that they were looking to solve with it. Cool. And it's stable. It's running in prod. They don't need to make any changes to it anymore, as far as I know. So there's no real reason for them to add more stuff. So I think that's kind of the state of it at the moment.
Y'all heard it here first. Completed software. The first time in history they set out to solve a problem and they solved it, and they decided we don't need to add a bunch of useless stuff to it.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, useless perhaps to them in particular. I think there's a lot of things you can add, but yes, you can choose to stop.
Just kind of, yes, like, you can. Which is crazy. So for them, they solved the problem. And you looked at it and you said, I want to do more. This needs to be more powerful and maybe solve a different problem, which sounds like the reason that the dog and cat kind of split is, hey, this works really well for what it does. In fact, I wanted to do something kind of different. So talk me through, because PG Dog is just recently through YC. Is that correct?
That's
just
correct.
Like this year. Okay. So yep. PG Dog is a company that you started, has gone through YC, and plays in the same space. So talk to me about deciding, I want to do another one. It's going to be another animal. It's going to be similar, and we're going to take it through YC. Before we get into the technical stuff, talk to me about that journey coming out of cat to dog.
Yeah. That's a great one. So this time I didn't take a month. This time I took about 6 months between gigs. So my last company, you know, shut down, and I was just like, well, you know what? I'm just gonna do nothing for a little while. I lasted exactly 2 weeks before. I started coding like a maniac, and some of the projects that I built in between, don't want to talk about because they're really dumb. And I kind of did it on purpose, just like to code some random things. Like I coded an app to track my dog's, you know, behaviors and stuff. I just wanted to learn like a front end language or whatever, like a mobile app, whatever. I learned how to use Supabase and all that stuff. And then towards like month four or so, I was like, well, listen, I should probably get back to like reality and code something that I actually like and enjoy and I want to do. And I was like, wow, I have this unfinished thing. Like, I started this, I didn't finish it. Let's try again. Like, third time or fourth time by now is the charm. Let's do it. So I spent again a few weeks writing code, just getting it done. And I wrote a POC, and I'm kind of sitting there and I'm like, I should probably get a job. Right? Because like, I have to pay the bills, you know, it's this is great, but let's maybe get a job and move on. So I applied to a few jobs, got a couple of offers, but then it was just like, I don't want to do like the that kind of stuff anymore. So, you know, I took a shot in the dark, applied to YC, you know, my chances were one in like 20,000, you know, it's better than zero. To my surprise, I got a call from Gary Tan, who said like, yeah, you can join. And that moment Yeah, I'll never forget that day. I missed this call, of course, because I was gaming. I was playing a game. My phone was on silent, and then, I have an Android phone. We could talk about that too. But it transcribes your voicemail, and it says like, "Hey, this is Gary Tan from Y Combinator. Please call me back." And I'm like, "That's not a call I should have missed."
Yeah, just tell him you were working hard on the product when he called. Did you apply as a solo founder? Because I know that, or at least the lore is they prefer co-founders. So you applied as a solo founder with a technical product, and did you have any sort of product market fit, revenue, anything at that point?
No product market fit. Well, I guess you could say like I built something similar before and it's used in production at a couple of big companies. So that's a good signal, I think. Mm-hmm. So that was my big, like, that was a huge part of my application. Like, hey, like I built something like this before. It's used in prod. I think this is cool. The market for Postgres is huge. Like I've been working on Postgres for like 8-9 years. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Been forever. So I think that helped a lot. I think they kind of looked at that and kind of overlooked the no co-founder part.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a few other solo founders in my batch, so I don't know if they prefer to have a co-founder, or is it just people want to have a co-founder and they apply together. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a self-reinforcing function probably, but no, I never felt like I was you know that different, I guess.
So what was your pitch to them? Like, I get it from the technical side. Like, from the technical side, I've done this thing before. I've got these ideas of how it can be, you know, more powerful, more useful, more helpful. What is your pitch going into Y Combinator of why this is going to be, you know, a $1 billion company?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Well, a lot of people run Postgres these days. The stats are kind of getting a little bit crazy, but, you know, last year, based on my research, at least like 50% of all new databases that are created in the world, and that includes Dynamo, you know, MongoDB, things that have nothing to do with SQL, like 50% of those databases is Postgres.
That's crazy.
So like this database is growing like crazy. It's going to beat Oracle. It's going to beat MySQL. It's going to beat all these guys. But it doesn't have like a reasonable scaling product. Like there's no sharding solution for Postgres out there. There is for MySQL. There is for Dynamo, obviously. There is for Cassandra, Scylla, Mongo. All that is sharded. Postgres is not. And people have tried this many, many times. Well, I shouldn't say many, many times. They've tried it a couple times. One of them was very successful, Citus. It took them 8 years to build something amazing. They eventually got sold to Microsoft, which is great. But then it kind of, you know, died. Not died, but kind of the development stopped. And people don't really use Citus as much as we'd like. So I just saw this like gap. I wanted to build something like this for myself personally, because I'm a Postgres user. I want this to exist for Postgres. And I've seen it really, really needed at Instacart. And I believe that there's easily 1,000 companies out there who would need that kind of product as well.
Cool. So you relied on previous experience and obviously growing market. And there's at least one in this exact space that exited to Microsoft. So you had some sort of directionally correct bet that this could be a thing. That makes sense to me. So then let's talk about the technical details of PG Dog. So let's start with a high level. We'll do another elevator pitch. High level, what is PG Dog and what are the areas of scaling that it concerns itself with?
Yeah, great question. So if you want to associate one thing with PG Dog, is going to be sharding Postgres and doing it in a way that is effectively transparent to the application. My pitch is like, you don't have to change Postgres or you don't have to change your app to make it work, which I think is kind of cool.
It's compelling.
Will it work? I believe so. I think we're going to run into a ton of edge cases around like complicated cross-check queries, aggregates, window functions, and CTEs, and foreign keys, unique indices. I have a list. I have a roadmap that you should look through.
Yes.
And
all of those things, yes.
And most of them are like, to-do. Uh-huh. Some of them are kind of working. Some of them are not yet. But this is what it's going to be. It's going to be really fast, transparent, sharded Postgres. and the data layer is going to be all entirely just like community PG, like not no forks, just Postgres, and everything that makes it scalable is manipulated at the network layer, so one hop above inside PGDog. So we make that completely transparent. That would be it.
Okay, and compare at a high level. Compare PGDog to Citus. So we know Citus got acquired. They went into the Borg and maybe have slowed down, stopped, you know, pushing. Architecturally or fundamentally, do they concern themselves with the same things, Citus and PGDog? And is there any fundamental architecture difference that you looked at Citus and said, I don't want to do that? Or did you look at Citus and say, I definitely want to do that on any of them?
Yeah, so great question. So I want to say there's two architectural differences, and I remember one very, very clearly. And by the time I finish the sentence, I will probably remember the second one. So let's start with the first one that I really, really remember.
Let's do.
Let's do, yeah. Citus runs inside Postgres. It's an extension. So to deploy it to prod, you need to use one of your PG instances as the coordinator. And you can only really have one. And that creates a certain limitation of throughput. You have to push everything through PG. It's process-based, which is usually fine. But once you start throwing like millions of queries at it, you can't like horizontally scale your actual sharding layer. PGDog is an application that runs entirely outside of Postgres. We took the SQL parser from PG, like the actual C code from PG, and copy it into PGDog. So we have 100% query compatibility, but we don't have the query engine. So we have to rebuild some of those features. But what this allows us to do is we can have, you know, N PGDogs running together in a pack and shard your Postgres in parallel. So it's much more scalable. And the latency profile for PGDog is considerably lower. So it's like to run a query through Citus, you'll notice the latency. And if you run through PGDog, the latency would be much smaller, which makes it actually feasible for like OLTP use cases, which I'm targeting. Citus was more OLAP, like online data warehousing, if you will. So analytical queries, and you know, they spent years and years and years building the analytical engine, which PGDog is quite a bit behind. So they support a lot of really cool, like powerful aggregates, which PGDog does not yet. But when it comes to online use cases, you know, transactional read-write data, PGDog is considerably faster. And that's really important, because like at Instacart, we actually considered using Citus, and we couldn't because it wasn't scalable, which is a little bit ironic, but that's just how it is. And the second one, and I think I'm starting to remember it now, it was around application design, because Citus kind of requires you to build your app around Citus primitives, while PGDog kind of hooks into your existing schema and tries to make it work, tries to shard an existing schema. That's going to be quite challenging, but that's really the goal, because when you come to somebody and who wants to shard Postgres at scale, you can't ask them to rewrite their app. No. Like they have millions of lines of code. They have thousands and thousands and thousands of queries. And you have to be able to come in and be like, I'm going to shard your app and your database. I don't expect you to move your app and your data to my database. It's a really big ask. So that's the path I'm taking. So those are two differences. Yeah.
Yeah. So to the first one, I saw that one of your, I don't know if it was the tagline or the footer or whatever on PGDog's site was something like scaling Postgres without extensions. And so that is a core belief of yours, is that PGDog will sit in front of Postgres, not be a part of Postgres. And is that fully informed by your time trying to scale Citus and running into those bottlenecks at Instacart? Or was there some other critical insight that you said, I don't want this inside of Postgres?
That's right. Well, frankly, both. I built an entire company before this that was based on an extension inside Postgres. Postgres ML was my last startup. And we tried to put machine learning inside Postgres as an extension. And working inside Postgres was like exceptionally interesting and really, really fun. But the way to deploy changes to your database through extensions is exceedingly difficult. And if you put an extension that will actually do something for you, you won't be able to deploy it to like 99% of databases out there that run on RDS or Azure or GCP that don't have your extension. So you have a massive distribution problem. Meanwhile, if you have an app that you could, a network app that you deploy in front of the DB and it does something useful. That's trivial. You can deploy it on EC2, on ECS, on Kubernetes, whatever. And it's completely transparent. So the distribution problem is effectively solved. So that is why I don't want to build an extension. It's just exceptionally difficult to actually give it to people and make them use it. And of course, there's the, like, we tried that at Instacart. We benchmarked it. We've never used it in production because, well, it didn't pass our benchmark suite. It was just not fast enough. So that's really the core of it.
The distribution thing makes a ton of sense to me, because anytime you're looking at a provider, you're looking at what extensions do they support, right? And so if you want to get in with one of the big dogs and they don't support your new little extension, you're kind of hosed, right? So Do you have, this is kind of outside of PG Dog specifically, but maybe for the general audience, do you have like a heuristic or a matrix of decisions of when an extension makes really good sense and when an extension like PG Dog does not make sense? So one of Postgres's, I think one of their great like reasons to use it is there's an extension for everything. It's like, hey, we'll just put everything inside of Postgres, which can be wonderful, but obviously has some drawbacks. So do you have a heuristic of this is a good extension case and this is a good standalone app case?
I think I do. I kind of made it up in my mind, and let me know if it makes sense. Like, try a use case that they implement inside an extension and then multiply it by 1,000 and see if it continues to work. Like, for example, adding a new data type, like PG Vector added a new data type inside Postgres. Mm-hmm. Can you have 1,000 of these columns somewhere? Absolutely. Can you have 1,000 of these indices in your database? Absolutely. It's completely scalable. Individual indices, you know, is a different story, but it works. It definitely should be an extension. This shouldn't be done outside the DB. Another extension, which I personally really like, but I don't think I'll be able to use, is pgcron. It runs the cron jobs inside Postgres.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, multiplied by 1,000, it's kind of hard to reason about. You know, you have like 1,000 of these cron jobs. They all run SQL. Like, it's all somewhere in the background. Like, it's really hard to manage. And most cron jobs, they have nothing to do with the database. They want to send an email. Like, how can you do that from inside Postgres, you know?
Yeah.
So that makes less of a sense to me. And then you kind of have to have another cron job anyway, so might as well just use that instead of having one inside PG. So that's my heuristic. You know, multiply it by 1,000, see if it still makes sense, and then you'll immediately kind of have a gut feeling about it.
That's a pretty, I don't know if you came up with that on the spot, but that's a pretty good rubric. It's one line, multiply it by 1,000. Does it still make sense? That's pretty good. Good job. Okay, so let's talk technically about PG Dog. Mm-hmm. So we understand now that it is not an extension. It is a standalone thing that sits in front of presumably many instances of Postgres. It concerns itself with sharding and connection pooling at the very least, probably more. And you pulled the query parser from Postgres proper, but not the query engine. And so I guess talk to me about the, like, the architecture. Is it built in Rust as well? Okay, so this is a Rust application that sits in front, and does it pretend to be Postgres to the outside world?
That's right. That's exactly right. Okay. We implemented the whole protocol, you know, from scratch. If you look at the spec, the protocol is actually not that complicated. Well, you know,
yeah. To you, maybe.
Perhaps. Yeah, I don't know. It took me a few weeks, and I still, like, find myself making mistakes. So actually, fair enough.
That's pretty complicated then, yeah.
It's up there. It's not HTTP. It's definitely a little bit more complex. Well, maybe it's stateful. That's the real issue. It's you have to keep track of what each client does and what each server does. And if you miss a step, you're gonna have like a really confusing error. Postgres is really good at detecting those errors and telling you did something wrong, but you as the pooler, you have to be able to do the same thing. So, you know, we keep track of transactions, we keep track of client server state, we keep track of prepared statements, we keep track of, you know, sharding keys, replicas, primaries, where's everything at any given point, memory usage, like the whole thing. So you could almost look at it as like, it's not a database. Like, let's not get carried away. The storage part is completely managed by Postgres, but a lot of things will get pretty interesting for sure.
So it is half of a database. It is all of the front half and none of the storage. And then you, so presumably the application connects. And at that point, PGDog has the connection.
Yep.
And then it is responsible for mapping those queries to the different shards, right? And so it goes off and queries one or n many shards. And then does it, how far, I suppose, I know you still have a lot of to-dos on the list, how far are you down the path of it queries three shards to get all the data, brings it back to PGDog, puts it together into a result set, and then sends it back to the end user?
That's a great question. I keep estimating that percentage in my mind, and every time I talk to somebody, that percentage gets a little smaller.
We're moving the wrong way, aren't we?
No, we're not. We're learning things, and that's really great. I knew getting into this that this is a multi-year project. This could easily be a 10-year project, 15-year project before it's finished. And that's expected, and that's really, personally, I like that because it gives me a job for the next 15 years, and that's like, it'll be amazing. To give you a more simple answer, if you have the sharding key in your query, like if you know which shard effectively you kind of have to go to, it works 100%. Like that's it. Direct to shard queries work today, no problem. If you don't have the sharding key, we can do the following things. We can collect results from multiple shards and present them as one. If you sort your results, we can also perform the sorting operation, because as you can imagine, you're talking to multiple databases. Even if you send the query everywhere and ask the Postgres to sort, like the overall sorting order will be wrong.
Still have to collate them.
Exactly. You have to collate them and then resort them as well. Because you know you have different values on different shards. You basically have to do a merge sort in the pooler and then send it over. So that's supported for at least three or four or five data types. I actually need to map every single Postgres data type and parse it inside PGDog and make sure that I have the sorting operation supported for it. And that's actually not as hard as you would think. You just need to like kind of go through like the 50 or so data types and parse them. And then most of them are pretty easy to parse. You just have to do it. And then aggregates are on the way. You could do min, max, sum, and count, which are, I always forget the word, transcommutable. Like if you can ask for each shard to get that value, and then you can combine that value in PGDog without recalculating the total result from the raw results, from the raw rows. So you can combine those. But for example, average is not supported right now, because for averages you have to get the total and then the average and then recombine it. So I need to write that query rewrite engine to do that. That's going to be probably done this summer, hopefully. But I also have more work to do that's a little bit different, around resharding and moving data between databases, because that's really the really important part. So to give you a fixed percentage, I want to say 30%, maybe.
Okay.
You know,
I'll take
like
30.
So the people I'm talking to right now, like companies that I like to do business with, they kind of understand what I'm doing, and they want direct to shard queries. Like they don't want their apps to actually do cross shard queries, because they're expensive and they're tricky. So for them, they're going to target 95% will be direct to shard with a sharding key, and then the 5% is where the real work will start. And that's what I'm working on right now.
So that's the query serving part. Talk to me about how the, I guess, backing up a step, we've got a massive Postgres database. We're in trouble. We call Lev. He says, great, let's get some PGDog in there. What happens then? Because, to the application, it should be and is transparent. You just connect to PGDog and do your thing. And presumably you're doing, where team ID equals one or company ID equals one or whatever, and you're going to a single shard behind the scenes. But how do we get from big struggling Postgres instance to PGDog is sitting in front of multiple instances? What's the journey there?
Great question. I'm designing two or three algorithms, or I should say like processes to do that. Two of them we've done at Instacart, so they're like pretty much battle tested. And I'm going to put that inside PGDog's open source core. So what will happen is you'll deploy PGDog. It'll see that you only have one shard, and you'll ask it to like, hey, make this into three shards. and is going to create three separate databases. It's going to migrate the data, reshard the data online into these three or six or 12 shards, whatever you choose. And it is going to do that atomically, because we're going to use logical replication, which is, you're probably familiar with it, but it's a way to stream application data from inside Postgres, like table data from inside Postgres to another instance. And we can hook into that replication stream, like actually parse the data and split it between between multiple shards. So I know it's really cool.
That's cool.
The protocol is documented.
We're extreme nerds because that sounds very cool to me. But yeah, keep going.
Yeah, it's an actual stream. It's documented. The protocol is documented. You can see what's the data inside that stream, so you can read it and split it. And the cool part about it, actually the cooler part I should say about it, is I think Postgres 16 or 17 allows you to create logical replication streams from actual replicas, from streaming replicas in Postgres. So I can imagine, you know, coming into this really overloaded SAT database, creating like 16 replicas in RDS, which is basically like a zero cost operation, spinning them up and stream 16 tables in parallel.
Oh, interesting. So you have the big guy. I was going to say big dog, but dog is a technical term in this episode. You've got the big guy, the big overloaded Postgres database. You can go into RDS and say, give me 16 replicas, and it'll do that.
Yeah,
quick and easy, been done 100 million times before. From those 16 replicas, you can get 16 different streams coming out, such that your sharding operation, if you want to call it that, is 16 times faster and not stressing out this already overstressed database.
Exactly.
Ah, cool.
Like, let me give you an example. Like, we didn't do that exact thing at Instacart. We snapshotted the primary, restored it separately, synced it up with logical replication, and then streamed from that using one table at a time, one stream at a time, I should say. And that took us about a week or two to create like a sharded cluster. And it was all manual. And you make one mistake, you have to go all the way to the beginning, like go back to like zero, whatever the monopoly, skip go.
Yeah,
do not collect.
Pass go straight to jail.
Straight to database jail. Exactly. Oh, man. Seriously. How many times I dropped the replication slot and lost all my progress? It was. Yeah. Anyway. That's why I'm building this company, this product, because I don't want anyone else to ever do this again. So, yeah, it took us like 2 weeks to create a 12 terabyte database, and we sharded it into like six, 2 terabyte databases. With parallel streaming, you could do this in less than a day, probably less than a few hours, frankly. I think this will make it actually operational. It's not going to be like a long, scary process. It's going to be like a quick thing you can get like real-time feedback on.
Very cool. And so you said there were a couple of ways you were thinking about this. Does this way have a name, and what are some of the other ways you're thinking of?
I don't think this way has a name. I should start naming these things, because
you should
be
start
cool.
Naming it. Yeah,
I don't know. We could come up with a name in a minute. But another one is that the one we actually did at Instacart, it's actually documented in a blog post somewhere. We take the primary, we create a backup in RDS. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, let me back up. We create a replication slot. I know, pun intended. We create a replication slot, create a backup, restore the backup, resynchronize the backup with logical replication by moving the origin inside the replication slot. Very scary stuff. People tell us you're going to blow up your database. We did not. People on the mailing list were like, if you do this, you will corrupt your data. You will lose all your data. We were like, well, I believe you. Actually, I don't believe you. And also, we don't have a choice. we're just gonna
terrifying.
Do it. It is, but you can test all these things out. Like, we did all of this offline with like staging databases. We validated that this actually works, and then we had a rollback plan and everything. Like, we're not cowboys. We're not crazy. We're just we like to experiment. You know, that's how mm-hmm. That's how you push the edge. You know, the envelope or whatever the expression is. So. That was a way to do it. And then once you have that little standby running, you can actually copy data using four data wrappers and four table partitions to like push that data out to the actual shards with literally like a copy statement. It was wild, but it worked. And then at the end, we took the hash partition logic from inside Postgres, like the C code, and we ported it into Ruby, because our app was in Ruby, and that was the routing layer. And then for the 1% of queries that could not be sharded, didn't have a sharding key, we used 4 data wrappers and like 6 different coordinators that you could like talk to and get these like aggregates basically to work. And Postgres 4 data wrappers are like okay, but they're not like, they don't work at scale. I would say that like latency is too high, but we don't have a choice. You don't have a choice. So,
okay, I followed about 18% of that. So the first one sounds a lot. The first one sounds a lot more straightforward and a lot easier to get your head around. And so, yes. where in the PG Dog handles this, you know, vector or scale? Where are we now for PG Dog doing this sharding part?
Like 5%. Not even.
Okay.
I have to build this over the summer. Well, ideally. Again, summer, we're already in July, and I've been saying over the summer.
Since... I wasn't going to tell you, but yeah.
I mean, it's San Francisco. I don't know what season we are. It's always the same. So anyway, I hope to finish it by the end of summer, because at least the prototype should be pretty, well, I don't want to say straightforward. Again, I keep using the same word to build, but it should be very doable to have an MVP of this by the end of summer, so people can start trying it out and making sure it works. There's a huge orchestration work to be done, like creating databases, synchronizing them, all of that stuff. I don't think that should live necessarily inside the core product, because we're talking about like making like AWS calls, and then if you're not on RDS, all of these things should probably be managed by some kind of cloud orchestration software, which I would like to build as well. But now I need more hands to help me with that.
Yeah, summer's almost over, my friend. So that I guess that was my other question is like, if you have to spin up, you know, 16, we'll knock it down, say 4, you got to spin up 4 databases. You as PG Dog, you don't know what provider they're on. You don't know what cloud they're on. They might just be on, you know, if they're DHH, they might be on a rack in some data center somewhere. So like, where do you draw the line of like, this is PG Dog's responsibility and this is the user's responsibility?
It's a good point. I don't think it should really ever be the user's responsibility in the ideal world. I don't think it should be inside PG Dog core necessarily. That's why I want to build a cloud basically where you can connect it to your GCP, Azure, AWS, whatever, you know, give me your key, trust me, and I'll do this for you, right? But a lot of the logic will live in an actual like web app, if you will. And then PG Dog is config driven. You'll just update the config and say like, all right, this is your primary. These are your 4 shards that I need populated with data. And then you can just like tell it to do that, and it'll create logical replication streams, because that part needs to be synchronized and high performance. So I don't want it to be like inside a weird web app.
Sure.
So that part should definitely be in PG Dog core. And because underneath it's all just Postgres databases, it doesn't have to be like PG Dog doesn't need to care about where Postgres runs. It's all, you know, application layer protocol. I think that separation makes sense.
Yeah. So the clean handoff is PG Dog ends up with a connection to a bunch of Postgres databases. How those databases came into existence, where they live, how long they've been alive, PG Dog does not concern itself with. If it can connect to the big guy and the 4 replicas, then it can do its job, which is still extremely complicated, configuring stuff, doing a bunch of stuff. But the crucial part is, can I connect to these databases that you claim exist? Is that like the clean separation?
Yeah, definitely. Being config driven is really nice, because you don't have to solve a lot of these crazy synchronization problems. Like, I don't need to use etcd or console or like all that funky stuff. I can just like put it in the config and then let it do its job. And it's easy to write. You can write it by hand. You can automate it, of course. You can generate a config using some other software. So I think the separation is really clean and nice. Yeah.
So I'm wondering, are you building a database cloud? Like, are you building a database host is my question. Are you building the planet scale for Postgres, which is, you know, complicated now, but is that what you're building? Because it sounds like you've mentioned the web component, but you've also mentioned hooking into the users or the customers, GCP or AWS or whatever. So I guess, what is your grand vision? Is it web orchestration, or is it bring me your databases and I will take care of them.
I think to get started, it's the bring me your databases and I'll take care of them. It's a really great proposition for most companies because nobody likes to migrate to a different cloud, correct, especially a brand new cloud. Forget it. Migrating to a different database, nobody wants to do that. It took us like three months to decide that we should try Aurora on one of our databases, even though they provided all the migration tools for us. And it took us months to migrate. And migration is a really, really bad word in the database world. Mm-hmm. So I want to start by just going to people wherever they are and sharding there. And eventually I can see, you know, once this becomes a repeatable pattern and I've really like built PGDoc to be a great, you know, reliable, powerful software, like running it as part of a cloud offering just makes sense. Now in terms of building, like, plan and scale for Postgres, entirely possible. I think running Postgres after all of that we just discussed, running Postgres sounds pretty easy. Like that,
yeah.
That's a solved problem. I've done this many, many times before. Eventually it would probably make sense to do that, but right now main focus is get PGDoc to actually shard Postgres, at least for the foreseeable future. Yeah.
So a couple of different times throughout this you've had good thoughts on distribution and adoption, the whole extension thing, the nobody wants to migrate thing. What is the shape of the company at this point? Because you went through YC as a solo founder. Do you have multiple employees? Are you doing like, is it like consulting right now? Or are you selling anything? Talk to me about like the business side of things, because you seem to be very tuned into it, especially for a technical founder.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, I just hired our first employee this week or last week.
Congratulations.
It's crazy. Like, I meet people on the internet and they're like, this is really exciting and I want to work here. And I'm like, that's amazing. that's really great. I mean, that's how it
that's
works.
That's great.
But, you know, every time it happens, I'm just like starstruck a little bit. So
of course.
He's a great guy. He's already like pushed the code change to production. We're doing great. So the team is growing. So in terms of business, I am mostly doing design partnerships at the moment. I'm looking for companies who, you know, have this need. I'm validating this is a real need and not just made up in my head. And I'm building the product with them. I have a few of them already online in production. So PGDoc is in production, very much so.
Okay, that's big.
It is. Yeah, like I would say like maybe probably 80% of the code that I've written is running in production right now and being tested continuously with real traffic, which is really great. So that's really exciting. And I'm trying to deploy a few more as we speak. You know, founder-led sales, you know, I blog, I do these things. I talk, I go on podcasts, I cold email people on LinkedIn. Some of them actually answer, which is bananas.
Who are these people? That's crazy.
Who are these people? Yeah. You know, directors of infrastructure, whatever, managers. Like, yeah. My ICP is like very well defined, you know, database people. Like they'll understand what's going on. So that's where I'm at.
That is incredibly impressive. All this time you're talking about, oh, the road expands before me. There's so much every day, like there's more to do. And yet you're in production places. So how did you find these first people basically to trust you? And what was your pitch to them of, hey, listen, you can trust me?
They pitched me, like they just kind of find me like, PGDoc is great, we have this need, can you deploy this? And I'm like, yeah, I can deploy it. Absolutely. And then we just deploy it. And well, we tested in staging first, you know, load tested a little bit, you know, but we're not crazy. And then deploy to prod, spot a couple bugs. I'm right there with them on a call, fix the bugs, push it to prod, iterate, you know, first design partner always, you know, has it rough. A few days, we fix all the bugs and it's in prod, right? So that's just how you do it. Being a YC company really helps. Like my first customer is a YC company. So there's a lot of like, trust mm-hmm. that we're both kind of like well-meaning people to begin with. You know, we want to help each other and we're not trying to like, you know, just like hack our way to something. Like we're legit, you know, so that helps a lot. you know, just blog about it, talk about it, explain what you're doing, open source most things, if not all things, you know, don't be afraid mm-hmm. to just like say like, this is how it works. And sometimes people tell you you're wrong and do it this way. And I'm like, thank you. That's great. Now it's a core feature. Thank you very much. You know, that's how you do it. You build in the open. That's the story.
So at some point during this, you said open core. So what is the structure of the actual code? So are you building most of this in public, and so you're getting a little community around you, and so that's a big vector by which people are finding you? And is there a proprietary sidecar adjunct non-core thing?
Not right now. Not everything's open source. Like, I mean, my pgdoc.dev, the website is closed source, but it's just a Jekyll template. Like, there's nothing there. The blog, docs are open source. Code is open source. The cloud might be closed source just because I'm embarrassed by how much bash I write, and people should not know how the sausage is made. it's not pretty, but you kind of have to, you know, do that that way. But yeah, pgdoc open source. Nothing's hidden. Yeah.
So you said this new person already has successfully deployed some stuff to production, which is awesome. Congrats on that. How does that deploy process work for somebody that is in prod? So presumably this new employee writes some code. They're, you know, Lev has never written any bugs, but let's imagine Lev writes a bug. The new guy fixes it. He, you know, pushes it to main. Then, like, what are your design partners? What does that deploy process look like to get the new version of pgdoc without, or maybe experiencing some downtime or not? How do they get that out there?
Yeah, great question. Well, first things first, there's like a massive integration test suite that runs on main every single time on all PRs as well. So we test everything. I think we probably are close to, you know, I don't want to make up a number. I haven't measured this actually, but I think we're almost at 100% code coverage.
Plus that's amazing.
Yeah, all the benchmarks, all the, you know, all the tests and stuff. Mm-hmm. And we have like a Docker container that we build on the main branch with every single commit. And I literally just take the SHA of the Docker image, and I slack it to my friend one of my friends, and be like, hey, this is the SHA, deploy this. And they're like, great, I'll deploy it in an hour. I'm like, sounds great. And in an hour they come back and they're like, great, it's deployed. I'm like, success. Amazing, you know. And then they kind of tell me what's going on. Yeah, I mean, that's just how it works, you know. It's really simple. Like, I have an expert on the other side, there's an expert over here, and we just kind of talk on Slack, you know. That's just that.
Okay, so this is a very, you know, it's not consulting, but it's a very hands-on. You're like, you are working with the customers right now to find any bugs or any performance things, or to get feature requests, or to hear what's working and what's not. How vital has that been to, I guess, shaping the near term roadmap?
It's the only way this will ever work. Anyone who decides to build this in an ivory tower somewhere and release it five years later, once it's finished, will fail. Because you can't spend time without talking to the people who are actually going to use it, and then kind of build something and then give it to them. And it's 9 times out of 10, it's just not going to work. Not because like your idea was wrong, but you missed like an important part of how they're actually using it. I talked to like, you know, dozens, hundreds of companies, and they all have their own little quirks around how they use Postgres and how they use poolers, how they load balance, how they want to shard. So these conversations are really important. And building with them is much faster, because I don't have to rewrite anything that I did wrong. I just build literally what they asked me for and I already kind of thought about. And it just confirmed to me that that's the right way to do it. So that is the YC motto, just like startup motto in general, is like, do things that don't scale to get started. And I'm going to do things that don't scale for probably the next 2-3 years. I'm going to literally sell to every single person individually. There's not going to be a sales team here. You're just going to be talking to me like for the foreseeable future until we're both blue in the face and you'll be like, yes, I will use pgdoc. I think that's the only way this can work.
Is it where's the money come from right now? Are they paying you to implement you as a company? Or are they paying you to implement this thing?
Yeah, asking for money is really important. You know, a design partnership should always be paid. So I'm asking them like to pay me like a nominal sum. And that tells me that this is valuable to people. Like if you do something for free, you have no signal. but if you ask for money, you have a pretty good signal. This is something that's worth your time and their time.
And how have the first design partnerships gone in terms of, like you said earlier, migrating is a scary word. I imagine adding something between your application and your database is kind of scary, way less scary. But how has that deploy process gone? Like the initial, not migration, the initial deploy, how has that gone?
Honestly, like not as bad as you think.
Not as bad as you think. I assumed it went well, but sure, carry on.
Well, it's never going to be smooth the first time, especially with the first design partner. The first design partner, yeah. Like we tested it in staging, it was fine, but then we deployed to prod, and there was a couple of like, I think we missed like, was something around prepared statements or something around transaction management, like the state management that was a little bit off. It didn't take anything down. It just caused like maybe like 1% of errors across, you know, across the queries, which is not great, but it's not terminal. So you kind of roll it back, you fix the bug, and then you roll it forward. And then as long as you have a smooth deployment pipeline for these kind of things, which we do, you know, they're using Kubernetes, so it's just a push button thing. You just deploy it in like in less than 30 seconds and that's it. So deploying a new code version takes no time at all. So the first design partner definitely takes up all the risk, but that is great because they're telling me and they're validating that this is a real problem. Like somebody who's willing to try something so experimental and, you know, and crazy directly in prod is telling me that what I'm working on is so important to them, at least, that they're willing to try this. And
they're willing to pay you for it. There's something that is so, so crazy and experimental, pushing to prod and pay you for the privilege of it. That's a pretty good sign.
I just have to do it 1,000 more times and then we have a company.
Yeah, exactly. Easy.
Exactly.
Straightforward at the very least. One thing you said a second ago about every company, you know, all 1,000 companies are doing something slightly different with Postgres. That made me go back to this is not an extension, because I'm sure, you know, extensions, they all work great together, but you don't have to care what other extensions they might have, the other weird things they're doing with Postgres, because you get to sit comfortably in front of it outside of that whole, like, hey, did y'all change a setting on Postgres? Because now PG Dog's all wonky. It's like, no, totally discreet. So are you finding that to be a benefit as well? Everybody can do their crazy whatever they want to do, and you're just kind of in the outside world?
Yes. And that's because the Postgres protocol, like the network protocol, is incredibly stable. They haven't made any like significant changes to it in probably like 20 years or so. Like, It's just like, it's well done. It's well documented. And all I'm doing is manipulating some bytes and some protocol state, which is fixed and most likely will never change. So whatever crazy stuff they do with extensions is just completely removed from what I'm doing. Yeah.
That's totally behind the curtain from you, and you super don't care about that.
Not usually. There's a fun article that I wrote that about sharding PG Vector, which kind of goes against this thesis, where I try to care about what's inside the DB and see if I could like change my sharding function based on the data that people are storing there, and it kind of makes sense. You could check it out. It's a little wonky. I don't know if it actually works, but it was a kind of cool prototype. Like, what happens if I implement one of the like vector indices that I inside PG Dog, and then I shard it across multiple databases, knowing that people are using PG Vector underneath, that's an extension. But that was more like a prototype than like I was playing with the idea more than anything else. I guess long story short, the general answer is no. I don't care about what they do inside Postgres, but sometimes maybe yes.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I don't think there are no absolutes except the fact that there are no absolutes. So it sounds like things are picking up. You've got an employee, you've got a bunch of design partners. Summer's almost over, so you're about to be done with everything. So as we wrap up here, tell me, like, what is the next? What do the next 6 months look like? What do you want from people that may be listening? And kind of tell me about, cast the vision for the next 6 months, and then maybe after that, give me the next 5 years.
5 years. In startup world, that is impossible to predict.
I know.
In fact, whatever I tell you right now will be completely irrelevant in like 6 months. I guarantee it.
Just cast a vision. Just dream.
Just dream. For anyone who's listening, please come and try PG Dog. It's free and open source. You can deploy it wherever you need to deploy it. I even have a Docker image. You can pull it straight from GitHub. Please try it. Let me know what I did wrong. That would be really, really helpful. If you find nothing wrong and you want to deploy this in your cloud, give me a call. I would love to help. Now, in terms of vision, sharding for Postgres can easily occupy the next 5 years because there's going to be all kinds of crazy cross shard cases I need to support. I really want to add support for like unique indices. That would be really cool. There's like so many like crazy optimization techniques you can do there. Foreign keys across shards would be phenomenal. Like all of these things that are like that would really differentiate PGDog from everybody else because nobody really does that. Because these are actually difficult problems. If you look at like CockroachDB, for example, that claims to be like, you know, sharded PG, which is not even Postgres underneath, but they don't support foreign keys across shards. And I mean, probably for a good reason, but I would still would want to explore all of these like niches that everybody kind of just abandoned and moved over. Building our own cloud would be great. So people can just like come in, you know, push a button and deploy PGDog wherever they need to. That'd be phenomenal. That's really the scalable business part. You know, you can't have me deploy it manually in every single cloud, at least not for long, if we're successful. Success looks like there's a push button deployment in my cloud where you get metrics, logs, you know, scaling everything, configuration. It would be phenomenal. So that's easily the next 2-3 years. You know, 5 years, I don't want to.
I'll settle for 2 or 3. You weren't going to give me beyond 6 months. You gave me 2 to 3, so I'll settle for that. That's plenty.
Fair enough.
So this has been great. This has been super fun. Tell the people where they can find you on your favorite social networks, or it sounds like you're doing a lot of writing about some of the gnarly Postgres stuff. So where can people connect with you?
Yeah, pgdog.dev, top right corner, book a demo. It's not a demo. It's just a call with me. I'm not going to show you anything that you don't want. I swear to God, it's just a 50-minute call. I recently signed up for Twitter, not called x.com. I think I missed that whole saga. I'm going to be there probably. There's a Discord. You can join and chat. GitHub, email. I think there's my address somewhere. You can send me a letter if you want. That's fine. Perfect. I won't think it's weird.
since you're new to x.com, the Everything app, I will tell you sometimes telling us what your username is would be super helpful. So how can we find? Oh, he's looking it up. He doesn't know.
Of course I don't. Hold on. I think I hold on a second. I think it's literally Lev PGDog.
You're like brand new, huh?
It's Lev PGDog. Literally no spaces. Oh, yeah,
that's great. All right. Well, I will add a link down in the show notes. I'll add a link to everything that I can find, including Lev PGDog on Twitter. Thank you. Thank you for, you look confused. Are you sure that's your username?
I'm signing into Twitter. Sorry, x.com to validate, to check that it is. And I think that's right. Hold on a second. I swear, I'm going to get better at this, but I'm an engineer first.
Flawless, no notes whatsoever.
It is me, confirmed.
Okay, Lev PGDog, great. So we will have a link to that and everything else down in the show notes. Lev, thank you for doing this. This has been a lot of fun, and I look forward to following along and seeing how PGDog does.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me so much, Aaron. I really enjoyed it.